the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Marrera's Magic Supercoach Podcast. I'm your host, Selby, with us to review round three and what we're going to do with our, at the moment, battling team mine is for round four. We've got Tommy with us. G'day, Tommy.
How's it going, mate?
I'm all right. I had a bit of a down week come Supercoach team. I was doing okay considering the carnage from round one, but really back with the pack this week. I think I got a 2,083 on the back of some underperforming, they're not really unique players, but compared to those at the top, whether it was a Doherty, a Bontempelli, Cornelio, and then what really killed me, and the issue with doing this value-based game I like to do with fantasy, the captain options, which I think round one I had Kelly's 88, round two I took a 115 as a VC, and then Rowan Marshall 78, so I think my average captain score is sub 100, which is not what we want to see, and which leads me to a rank around that 10K mark, but plenty of time to go in the season, particularly with this extra round. There's still 21 to go. How did you end up this week?
Yeah, similarly poor and not where I'd want to be. So I scored a 21.25, which has me around the 30,000 mark, dropping 7,000 points for this week, which is obviously not ideal. And similar issues to your team, I guess, with having those underperformers in Doc, Cogs, the Bont in the midfield. And I suppose when comparing my side against those that are doing well, sitting obviously a fair few spots ahead of me, sort of in that top 1%, which is around the 100, 1.5K mark, I went through and I've sort of looked at it and I've got about 24 of the top 26 owned players. And then sort of one of them's Mateus Philippou and the other one's Clayton Oliver. So I guess for me, it gives me a little bit of confidence because one, it suggests my team isn't too far off. Two, I guess the concern around not having that really strong captain option for week to week, which you assume everyone that's got Clary has put the big C on him every week and reaped the rewards. And I guess the third is that those players that I haven't got in that top 26 that have underperformed, one, they're all keepers, so they're the ones that I'm pretty confident that can bounce back. In a Cogs, who obviously had a poor week just due to his disposable efficiency, and Doc and Bont. And then I suppose we ride that wave and hope they improve, while the point of difference is the other coaches have got don't quite live up to the expectations they've put down in the first 3 weeks. So while I'm not happy with my rank, I'm still pretty buoyed about where my team sits and what those trades can do in the next couple of weeks when we kick into upgrade season, where I can improve and sort of claw those points back.
Yeah, I think you're right. It becomes this trading game, which is all the fun. And I've got to do the numbers on Supercoach, but I know fantasy, the gap between first and thousandth is about 200 points. And it's the same gap between first and thousandth as it is from a thousandth and 17,000. So 200 points, we just see that's this week, like the good scores are putting up 24s. We got 2,000s, that 4,000 difference you can make up in 1 week. So it's still very early days and it does make it obviously tempting to jump off those underperformers. But on the flip side, you just got to look at those rankings and the stats that the ownership amongst those top echelon, that all you need is that little reversion and then you get that jump straight back. So what we'll do today is talk about potential trade options. But before we do, obviously the way we run this is looking at what's worked well in the past and philosophies and how we can apply that to our side, because unlike fantasy where you've got the two trades per week, use or lose, this one it's limited. You've got, well, the 36 to start the season. I dare say a lot used trades in the last couple of weeks, which gets pretty scarce as I found out towards the back end of last year. So am I right in saying the old school mentality and the Supercoach philosophies typically say round four, we don't use our trades?
Yeah, I think that's the old school philosophy, and it probably should be the new school philosophy, but it's going to be very team dependent. I suppose depending on the amount of trades you've used over the last couple of weeks, probably will indicate whether you've got a license to trade this week aggressively. So for my team example, I made the six. So I've used two boosts, maximum trades over the first 2 weeks, which sort of puts me in a position where I've got 30 left. And looking at my team, I've still got to need to do those upgrades. So I've got 12 keepers, so there's a heap of positions that I need to upgrade on, which you could sort of, as a best case scenario, I think you're probably going to use around 21 to 23 to get those players to full premium, which doesn't leave me a whole lot for injuries. So around that 8 mark for the rest of the season to address injuries and maybe do a bit of sideways through the buys, depending on how my planning goes. So for me, I think I'm in a position where I need to hold. I'll probably do one, which is a bit of a rookie correction. But I think I can't be too aggressive at this point. But I guess your mileage may vary. If you have only used 3 coming into this week and you can certainly see the scope of improving your side by using 3, I think you're in a position to do so. So very team dependent.
Yeah, and we'll talk about our trades, what we're looking to do come the end of this. It was an interesting round, the round just gone. It was a bit of vindication for backing in your pre-season research and what we've done. Unfortunately, we were dealt a few different blows in the first couple of rounds, which meant a lot of coaches didn't get to reap the rewards of that. So a lot of coaches started with a Tom Stewart, injured, forced trade, looked to be 5-6 weeks, returned miraculously and did what we know he can do, which is being not just the best Supercoach defender in the comp, but he can score as well as any Supercoach player in general. In the comp, those, myself, you, a lot of our subscribers, Josh Kelly, round one, started with him, got the concussion, no guarantee he was going to return after one, had to find some cash somewhere. We jumped off. Vindication showed he had more CBAs than he did at all last year and put up a big score. So that was good and bad news for those who traded and good for those who obviously held. And then a lot of the trade-in targets... Oh, Sean Darcy was the other one. I know a lot of people jumped off after his poor one, and then he had a bit of vindication there as well when he's finally played in the right position. Then the trade-in targets, who were these value mid-prices, so I still stand by them being the correct call, because we've seen over the past those competition-winning picks of those guys, that mid-price price point where they can perform close enough to those top echelon premiums and generate similar to cash, even more cash than decent rookies, as well as having better job security. So whether you went down to a Setterfield, a Zeeble in particular, they under-delivered, but I still think they're going to come good. It's a few other underperforming mid-prices, whether it's a Warple and a Callaghan, we'll need to speak about in a bit what we do with that, because the way going through that, we knew that we needed to use those early trades to make sure our team was best structured to have the most cash gen and points going forward in those early rounds. And that's what the first two rounds, that's why I use your two boosts. And I'm with you, ideally we're not trading this round, because the old school mentality is that you want your rookies and mid-prices to generate at least 150K to then be worthwhile making that upgrade, one down, one up, and getting more premiums in your field. Whereas if you're doing still fix-up trades now, whether it's mid-price fix-ups, rookie fix-ups, especially if they're still named and playing, who's to say it's not going to be swished up the week after like we just saw this week? But I say that, I'm currently in my plans, I'm jumping off an underperforming mid-pricer and jumping on a performing mid-pricer and chasing those points from the last couple of weeks, which, as we all know, past performance is far no indication of future. But what we'll do, as we've done the last few weeks, run through each position. Those who's caught the eye, performing well, do we jump on them now or do we wait? Those who aren't really performing, what do we do there? If you're an owner, do you back them in? And then a few rookies, because you did mention a little rookie fix-up. They're the ones who you can and should be doing your trades this week. If you've got someone like a Constable who doubt he's going to get back in the side, someone else, Chessa, who's now been injured, not getting back in the side, if they're just going to be dead weight rookies and you've got some decent crop coming in, which we'll go through them in a bit, then it definitely is worthwhile jumping on someone and reigniting that cash gen to try to get that 150 to go. Do you agree with that, come the rookies?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. They're the ones that are going to make us cash and facilitate the upgrade. A dead rookie's worth no money and a performing rookie's worth hopefully 150 plus, which is why you would target them. So that justifies the trade in my opinion, and I think that's kind of where you want to be headed. But obviously a lot of coaches have had their hands forced with some injuries, which creates some creativity in the pivots that you could probably do this week.
So Tommy Stewart's the first defender to speak of. He obviously as mentioned at the top, we all know he's a gun. He's a popular starting pick. I think he was the second most popular premium defender to start the season. It was stiff for those who did start with him. He showed what he can do second game back. Because that first low score is still beating the price point, he still has a very high break-even for this upcoming round. So the logical play is to wait a week with his break-even in the 160s, even though he did score 167 last week. Odds say, suggest that he's going to be cheaper next week than this week, plus get an extra look at him and everywhere else. Do you see a world where you could go 1 week early on a Tom Stewart, or you'd be mad to go this week now?
I don't think you'd be mad to. For me, it's not a move I would do. I think with Tom Stewart, what we have seen in past years is he's got a high variance in his scoring. So he averaged 110 or so last year. But that average is pretty propped up by some really high scores. So he had 187, 174 and 161 in his scores last year. But then just looking at it, he's kind of probably got eight or so scores in the sort of 90 to 105 mark. So in terms of that consistency of that really high output, hasn't really done it before. There's a fairly high variance in his scoring. And I think I'm not sure he's going to back it up. He didn't last year when he had the big scores. He didn't back it up with a monster the week after. 1 week he went 187 and 74 the next week. He got injured one after that. So I think for me, it's not someone I'd be must targeting. And I don't really see there's anyone in your defensive line that is worth trading out and moving on to him. I think for me, given he's coming back from an injury as well, obviously he had a bit of a miraculous recovery. I think it's a little bit too risky. And I don't think the point upside is definitely going to hurt you if you don't jump on. So for me, it's probably not someone I'd be targeting this week.
Yeah, I'm with you. We came into the start of the year where there were the five gun defenders where we couldn't really split them, and we all knew that that price point's very hard to sustain, and for that reason teams went very light in defense and more often not picked just one of those gun defenders. And out of them, poor Stewart was one who got injured, and the rest have performed fine, whether it was a Dawson, a Sicily, Sinclair a little bit lower than that, but they're still, well, Dawson's performing well. What his season average so far is a 107, and he's already dropped 12k with a 116 break even. Sicily's doing fine as well with a 107, but he's already dropped 16k with a 140 break even. Jack Sinclair's dropped 30k, going to drop more. So that puts Stewart in that same bucket, that it's a very high score to maintain, and especially with that low score already built into it with one drop in price. I'm certainly not going this week, but I'll be looking at him very closely next week, particularly depending how some of my other defenders go. You did say there's no one in defence who you would toy with moving on. So Doherty's the other name amongst those expensive ones who we were bullish on in terms of his second half of last year, better than the first half after missing the full pre-season. Doing a full preseason this year, looking great in the preseason game. Word of inside midfield time, which we know can up his contested possession rate and get some big high ceiling scores there. So he's the one I started with. He's the one you started with. He's the one which a lot of coaches did start with. He's been underwhelming scoring wise to start the year. And this is the one where the scoring system, and I've been an advocate for the Supercoach scoring system almost from day dot, but it really comes back to sting you as a Doherty owner when you're also covering AFL Fantasy, and he was an absolute star for the week, scoring near 140 with 39 possessions. But Supercoach, obviously not many of those possessions were contested. Then somehow he got himself an 87 despite all those possessions. Is that a worry, knowing that this is a guy who you picked to play what he did do on the weekend? I think he was named Carlton's second best to Cripps. Played out of his skin. Everyone talked him up post-game, and you see, well, he played so well, had it ball so many times, and still only managed an 87. Is that a concern for his output going forward?
It's not a concern for his output going forward. It's bloody annoying for his output on the weekend. I think I'm probably more concerned with the Geelong performance in isolation. I think that was just a down game from him. He didn't find as much of the footy, so that was probably more of a concern. I think when someone's collecting the footy 39 times, who's historically a good user of the footy, I think this one's more of a bit of an aberration and not something that I think is going to be indicative of his performance moving forward. Of course, he's going to be less effective when he's moving in the midfield and he's getting more contested footy around the contest. So I think he had 5 ineffective kicks, which he doesn't get scored for. He had 5 clanger kicks, which are a minus points, 3 ineffective handballs and 2 clanger handballs, which are minus as well. So, he found the footy perfectly. He was fit. He played well. This is just one of those scores, and we'll probably talk about Cogs and the Bont as well. I've got all 3 of those who had games where they found enough of the footy and they did good things, but it's just around that effective use of the footy that absolutely killed his score. This isn't something you'd expect to see from him moving forward. He's had games where he's played in the midfield at the end of last year, as well as had a couple of runarounds in the preseason, and he used the ball well on those occasions. So I think this is just an off ball night, ball use night for him, and not something that I'm concerned moving forward. It's annoying he's going to lose cash, but I don't think trading him out is going to be worth it unless it's going to facilitate some pretty significant upgrades across the rest of the side.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Just a shame for those coaches, and us included, that we had them all happen on that 1 week, and it's rare that you're going to get the Doherty. Yes, you're going to see some high uncontested footy, but it's rare you're going to get the uncontested times inefficient. Likely they go hand in hand, and what we've found with Carlton and Doherty in particular, they've had 3 very tight games to start the year. They had the draw, they had the 8-point game versus Geelong, and then they had that near miss versus GWS. They've now got Kangaroos to come and a pretty easy draw the next few that hopefully there's a bit more bruise-free footy there. Doherty picks up those, I know we don't get as many points for uncontested, but he's going to be a lot more efficient with it, and we'll see the scores. So my Rage Trades Monday did have him traded out, but I've come to my senses now and not going to go. And the one I was going to trade down to was more that mid-price bucket to get the cash to then move up a mid-pricer to a premium elsewhere. And there's a few in that bucket. Couple of words on Ed Richards, who's one who I looked at him. I was actually surprised how expensive he is. And you'd probably say he's not really a mid-price at that price point. I think he's priced at the 90 mark average, 470K. He's been great to date, no question, with a 96 average. But that's almost a price point. And you tell me, you'll know this more than me, but almost you want to be keeping him for the rest of the year and be prepared for him to be in your team the rest of the year. And if he does produce that 96 average, that's going to be giving up a few points to those top 6 defenders come the back end of the year.
Yeah, if you pick someone at that price, you don't want to be trading them out. You might be able to do a luxury trade around the buys if you're flush with trades and we haven't had injuries and your buy structure is really good, but that's a lot to plan and hope for. So for me, he's not someone that I would be targeting just based on that as well. The score of 111 to the eye, I would have assumed that he would have scored a lot better than that, given his impact on the game and how well he was playing. So I guess I'm a little bit concerned around the ceiling and where it goes from there. And we've probably seen the week prior where he scored a 70, that his floor can be well outside that sort of top 6 range. So he's a really good pick if you started him. I think you'd be very happy with that and you'd sort of ride that train. But trading into him, especially given that we're not in upgrade season yet, so you're not actually jumping up for him and getting sort of an underpriced player, you're probably moving off a keeper in that scenario, which probably isn't advisable, because I think you'll probably, if you were moving someone like Doc to him to grab the cash, I think you're probably going to lose points in the long run and you've traded out, and he's not going to make you cash because you sort of you're trading in to hold him, and the cash from Doc isn't probably worth it. So not someone that I'd be targeting, but I'd be pretty happy if I started him.
Yeah, I'm with you, and we've also seen a underwhelming start from a Bailey Dale, who you think is going to fire again. And with Daniel being backed in defence with no centre bounce last week, there's still the 3 of them. We might see some variance between the 3 of them each week. Whereas come the Doherty case, you know that despite Saad being so good there, Doherty is the man who does rack up the footy. The mid price I was considering with that Doherty move down is a Will Day, who came into the year underpriced back on the back of his injury-interrupted season last year, and I quite liked him even just as a defender pick. it was then flagged pre-season. He's going to play some midfield. Didn't think he was going to be inside mid, and he looked a bit awkward in the pre-season, but the role was there. But since the season has started, he's made that inside mid role his own. He did have a low Supercoach score round one when I think he had 20% centre bounces, so there was a lot of uncontested footy, which didn't help his scoring. But since then, he's put back-to-back hundreds with a monster 139 last week, playing high inside midfield minutes, and I can't see that changing. So he's now got a season average of 99, but as I said, coming off that 139, price at $402,000. I know they're not going to win every week. There's every chance they won't win again for the rest of the year. So winning teams typically get that boosted score, more score involvements, more score assists and whatnot, easier footy. But he's one I'm really, really interested in. I think if he had a better round one score, I would have looked closely at him even last week before the big score. Have you got thoughts on Will Day?
Yeah, look, I think his role's really good. And I think even though it's a small amount of data, we've seen over the last couple of weeks that he's getting around that 60% mark, which is really good. And it's sort of reflective that his scoring's increased along with those. Obviously, a matchup against North, which is probably going to be as easy as they come. So that's probably a high mark in terms of his scoring. And I think when you sort of look at what cash he can make, because I don't think he's got keeper status in him, unless you disagree with that.
Well, probably he doesn't when you look at those big numbers come Supercoach of last year. Like, you imagine Stewart, Sinclair will get there again, the way Ryan's going. Doherty, hopefully. Dawson, like, they're doing 110 plus this day and age. And is a first-year midfielder, like first-year actually playing inside mid, going to be an average of 110, who even as a midfielder, you got to be a very good midfielder to average that 110 mark. So he's likely to be more that 95 to 100 mark. If it's more just wouldn't be a keeper, I can kind of see him making close enough to that 150K before around his buy time and then jumping off and making that move to one of those top echelon guys and the cash he can make elsewhere. So I like him. I didn't want to experiment, despite the fact I've got too many Hawks on my team as it is, with this Hawks midfield, knowing that Sam Mitchell likes a bit of experimentation. And we saw that round one with Warple's big centre bounces and 20% a day, not much to Ward. But I think they've seen now a lot more talent in Day and Ward in there, that I think we're going to see more and more of them and less of the Warple, which we'll get to in a minute, that I'm pretty cool on him at the moment. But yeah, I'm a Will Day fan, and as it stands now, he was in my Monday rage trades. He could easily find himself back in there. It might be via more of a non-keeper, like a Ridley rather than a Doherty, but we'll keep you posted.
I think there is there's certainly an argument for it. And I think, again, it would be team dependent. I think someone who's probably the most feasible to trade out to him would be a Doc. And then, you know, you've sort of extracted 170K out of that, which could facilitate upgrades elsewhere. So I think when you sort of look at his projected, when you look over the next couple of weeks, Supercoach has it. I think they're reasonable numbers, 86.93, 86.93 over the next 4 weeks. That has him making, around 70K, which will come in the next 2 weeks, and then he'll stagnate. Which is, you know, a pretty nice cash generation as well. You've extracted money out of Doherty. I think where he would make sense is if you're holding a Warple and you want to move off him because you're not comfortable in his role and his scoring potential. Maybe you have a Darcy Cam, D-Cam, and you want to get him up to English, but there's no other way of extracting that money. I think they're feasible trades, but I just don't think he's got keeper numbers in him. And as well, I think if it's just a cash grab in a one move, it's not worth doing. It's just how you can use that cash and if that strengthens up or addresses injury issues in other lines.
Yeah. So yeah, my Mad Monday trades were Doherty to him, which gave me the cash to get Warple up to LDU, which I quite liked, but we'll talk about all those players involved in a little bit. Quick one, Liam Baker, similar kind of point, bit more expensive, closer to the Ed Richards type, where you definitely want to be able to keep him for the year. I think if he had that role, no Jaden Short, and they used him in that same role all year, then he definitely could do that. And you got tricked into it last year when he was putting up those big numbers. Because he is such a good player and a team player and skillful, hard, selfless, one week he might be found in a forward pocket, half forward flank, inside mid. He's just a very much a role player, and I don't want to play that game of, particularly in this fixed trade format of super coach, of someone whose role is a bit unreliable despite him being such a gun.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think much more needs to be said. If you could guarantee his role, then you'd be comfortable jumping on. But we really can't. One injury and he'll get flipped around. And I think, yeah, you're just going to be using a trade to get out of him. So not for me.
Quick one, Jack Buckley, a cheap option, 275K. Put up a 99 last week to go with his 80 in second round, which means that he's on the bubble, low break even. Oh, sorry, he's not on the bubble. He's had the three games. But he's averaged 91, so he's already up 70K. Personally, I think he's very much overperformed. He's a key defender. We saw it with a Brandon Cox the first couple of weeks, and Cox is more of a mature interceptor who does take a bit of marks in the Freo Docker old school game plan, whereas there's every chance Buckley could drop a few 40s in a row, hurt you on field, because that sort of price point you're playing him on field, plus that cash generation is going to stagnate pretty quickly. So for me, it's a no for Buckley. Yourself?
Yeah, it's a no for me as well. I can't believe he's 25. he's obviously a mature body, which works in his favour, but at the same time, in terms of, I suppose, growth, in terms of his role and his scoring, I don't really see it being there or being sustainable. He's in his first year. He's having a bit of a purple patch. I just think if you're going to be trading into someone, you want to be getting on a rookie that's going to make cash, because I don't see him making 150.
Moving into the mids, just got a few we'll talk about. The first one is one I traded. Again, I keep trading these guys to find the cash. It was Kelly round one, came out with a monster. McRae round two, came out with a big one. So probably all the Doherty owners are hoping that I do find my way to get cash off Doherty, because he's going to go good this week. But Jack McRae, I still stand by that being a decent move, knowing that we spoke about Bevo, the change of roles, what he's going to be week in, week out. You saw the centre bounce break up with McRae, it was still only the 60% mark, and I picked him as a starting keeper, thinking he's going to be 75+. And his big scoring quarter was the second quarter, when he had around that 70% centre bounces for that quarter. He was sub 50 for the other three, and those three quarters he was less than 25 points. So if he held, good on you. I hope he does perform well, but it's a nervous week-to-week proposition, particularly seeing someone like a Bailey Smith go from a 60% round one to a 30% round two to a 5% round three. Leave me out of that Bevo conversation. Bontempelli, we've touched on him already, how he's harder to trust now with a VC and captain, but it's going to all click soon. He's copped some big knocks. He's had games not go his way. He's played some great footy. He's been tagged throughout. We just, as owners and starters, it's going to come. I still feel he's going to be that 120 guy we want him to be. We're just waiting for that week. Underperforming premium, and we haven't covered this. I think a lot of people who did start with might have jumped off him in round three, but Noah Anderson just been poor and looks a shadow of what he was. I think Rao taking that extra leap, winning more clearances. I think he leads a comp for clearances. Matty Rao has taken a bit of footy out of Noah Anderson's hand. If you had a player like this who you pegged as a keeper, they've already had a price change built in. It's round four. Are these the ones where you just feel like you're stuck with them until luxury trade time if you've got those extra trades at the end of the year, or there's still merit to make that move now on an underperforming premium? Say, like if a McRae or a Bailey Smith might have scored poorly this week as well.
I certainly think there's merit. I think when you look at someone like Noah Anderson, you bought him as a keeper and he hasn't put up 100 points yet. I think looking at a sideways off him is definitely worth doing, because the role's good as well, which is probably even more of a concern. Like he's 76 CBAs on the weekend, 77 the weekend before, and he hasn't put up the scores, which you'd expect from that role with a player of his talent. He'll probably come good at some stage, but it's really hard to explain what that scoring is. And I think we're early enough into price cycles where you could jump off maybe an LDU who hasn't gone up yet. It's not going to take too much cash to get there. I think that's something I would be doing. If we were getting this sort of performances from I suppose, mid-prices, how low they're performing in comparison to their price would be jumping off. And I think the same's for a premium, like Noah Anderson is what you bought him for. So I'd be looking to jump off if I still had Noah Anderson, to be honest.
And then Bailey Smith, I know, is a lot less popular owned. The upside of him will be that he's likely, very highly likely, to get the forward status, but that's still a couple of weeks away. He's underperforming when he plays this forward role. I'd be tempted to do the same, not as I mentioned with McRae. I don't want to muck around with this Bevo system and the way the forwards are going anyway. Who's to say he's going to be a top six? So I'm on the trade side of it. But let's talk. You mentioned some mid prices, and Setterfield obviously under delivered first round. Lots of people traded him in with an 82, but he had a slow start. I think he's going to be better. There's a bit of murmuring about a possible concussion, but have you heard much about that?
No, I haven't. I think apparently he came off late. I don't know if it's concussion. I think I don't think he was on our injury report. So I don't know, but I hope not.
Yeah, well, he'll do what he needs to do. He'll generate that 150 and hopefully go back to those 100 plus scores. I think we picked him to be a 9500 plus. So a couple of 82s every now and then will be fine. It's more the worry comes about with a James Warple, who looked great in the preseason, no question about that. Round one looked good. I think he was Hawks' best midfielder. Round two, first quarter, that's when I traded him in. Round two looked really good, and I even messaged you, said, gee, looks good on the eye. He was getting those first clearances, first hands of the footy. Second half, he seemed to tire, and don't know whether he's carrying something, but just looked, I know he's not the quickest man, but looked a bit step behind, and the ball bounced over his head a little bit, and I finished the game pretty happy to get that 99. I think he got scored. He didn't give me a heap of conviction, but he looked terrible versus the Kangaroos, and obviously the play was a lot more through a Newcomb, a Will Day, a Ward. Moore got up there and got a bit of the footy. It makes me worried about his, firstly, job security, and then even his scoring output, that he has that, got that capability to put up scores in the 50s and 60s. This round, obviously, we've got him as not as a keeper. We've got him to generate cash, and he's still got a break-even of 50 despite his average season of 80. So is it someone who you can be like, okay, well, let's just keep him to get a few 80s for the next few weeks and get a little bit more cash out of him, because we got him to make us cash. He's only gone up 28K to date. Or with these extra trades, you can just rip the Band-Aid off and say, okay, I don't see this working well. I'm going to try to get him up to either a top-end premium or maybe down to a new rookie and upgrade elsewhere?
I think there's strong arguments for both. I think with Warple, just given the way that he uses the footy, his scoring and his ceiling is never going to be sort of elite. And then when you consider the fact that his CBAs sort of took a massive hit on the weekend, that really limits his exposure to get those high possession numbers that are going to be needed to put up some big scores. I'd definitely be concerned if I was an owner in Warple, and he's got a tough matchup this week against Geelong, and then GWS the week after, then Adelaide and the Doggies. So you don't see, I suppose, in three of those games, Hawks having the lion's share of the footy. So it's certainly a concern. I think it's tough because in my position, if I had a Warple, I don't think I'd be trading him out because I've already used too many trades on doing sidewayses. But at the same time, if you've got the cash there to upgrade him or, you know, getting him down to a rookie, which means you could be playing like a Cam McKenzie on field, which you weren't before, and then upgrading a defender, say, or a forward, I think that it's a worthwhile play. Or if you're using his cash to, say, get Cameron up to an English, I think that's worth doing. But it's just tough because he's obviously at an awkward price point. He can put up scores. If he holds the role that he had on the weekend, the poor scores are going to come, and that's what everyone was worried about pre-season.
Yeah, I'm with you. He needs that 70% plus, which he was in the pre-season and come round one. But, yeah, back-to-back sub-60 centre bounces, it's going to be hard for him to get those 30 possessions he's going to need. So at this point, he's in my trade plans. I really want to move him. But on the flip side, looking at my team, like, I was happy with it the way I was looking last week and the week before, that this is maybe where you just got to have that patience and bide your time. You pick them for the reason, you've done the research, and as long as he's named, he's going to still generate a little bit of cash for you, and he's shown he can put up a 100-plus score. The one who we talk about bad roles, Finn Callahan, obviously looks very hampered by that hit in the shoulder. He's not generating any cash, and with his break-even of 69 coming off a 37 season average of 61. So when you've got these players around this price point who aren't generating cash, they're scoring like rookies but not generating cash like rookies, then they become dead weight. And unfortunately with Finn Callahan, we thought that if that midfield role was going to come, which it looked like it was going to be against West Coast before he did get that big hit, it doesn't look like it's going to happen now. So I know you are an owner of Finn Cow. Have you got a different opinion than that of Warpwin? You would be looking to get some cash down to a rookie, and probably Phillips is the obvious choice.
He allowed me to get Darcy up to English, which I still don't regret, by going Callahan over Warple, and I think we're probably staring at the same position in my midfield and wanting to trade him out this week either way. I'd rather own Warple than Callahan for sure, and I think Warple's more likely to put up decent scores week to week over Callahan. Obviously, the shoulder is obviously an issue because he didn't have any CBAs and he was getting them the week before, not a huge amount, but he was getting them. I think at his price point, he's just nowhere near going to generate enough points to generate cash, and I would rather have 100k sitting in my salary cap for upgrade season and moving him to Phillips than having him on field. Because I think someone with hampered shoulders who is only playing on a wing, can't get out, probably going to be impacted in taking marks, which is where you sort of hope a wing is going to get points from, and he can't do the work on the inside. So yeah, I think at this point he's almost a must trade if he's in your side.
So this is now for those who have come from the fantasy game where we're trade and get the best you can get and hope they do okay. So a lot of teams have both a Warple and a Finn Callahan, and this potentially goes back to the starting squad and some philosophies and learnings that you can, if you have too many of them and they all misfire, because not every year they're all going to pay off, then you can get yourself in a real tricky situation. So in fantasy, it's a very simple Finn Callahan down to a new rookie, Warple up to the best midfielder you can get. So whether that might be a Caleb Sarong or a Newcomb or someone around that 90-95 price point who's going to be a long way off the top 10 midfielders, but are going to at least get your points in the field for the next 6 or 7 weeks. That's the play to do in fantasy. Come Supercoach, it's a different game given these limited trades. You'd rather hold that, you trade one down a rookie and hold that extra 100-150k and not have to spend it this week and save it for until you can get a chance where you can get a keeper the rest of the year?
Team dependent. I've got no one else that I want to move off of. It would only be trying to put that cash into another rookie up to someone, but all my rookies are generating cash. So for me, it doesn't make sense to use that cash this week. I think if you've got both of them, I think that's actually a pretty good move. Like, you could move Callahan to, say, a Phillips, trade out Warple, maybe swing one of your defensive mids like a Gibney into your midfield and then pick up a Will Day. Something along those lines, I think, is a move that is worth doing, or if you can even get up higher in your defensive ranks. I think that's definitely a move that I would do. If I own both of them, I would use the two trades this week to do that, I think. It's just for me. I've got nowhere else to put the cash, so I'd rather hold it for upgrade season, just because I think it's almost a dead move for me.
Yeah, and if you can get up to someone, there's a few underpriced premiums. We've seen the LDU can score as well as anyone, and might have been a blessing that he missed that Finn McGuinness tag game. I know that there's every chance Ed Kerner will tag him this week again, but he's also a prime target. If you can get like two of them, one down, one up to someone around that price point, then that's, you're picking someone to be at least a keeper variety. Let's get to the rucks, which becomes an important position for a lot of coaches, knowing how popular Darcy Cameron was and how good he was looking. We all knew he could mark around the ground and be agile, pick up ground balls, lay some tackles, but it's more his hit-outs to advantage and his work around the ground, which impressed me and looked to be a great pick for those who did start. And just looking at these ownership numbers, obviously 34% of overall coaches, but there's also 34% of top 1,000 coaches, 29% of top 100. So a lot of good coaches did have him. And fortunately for them, at least he left you with a 110 average, and he's not up in price and was a decent score to finish with. You've got a few options. You've mentioned a few times about finding that cash for a Tim English, who I think there's no question, we saw it this time last year too, that he can put a big gap on the rest of the competition come scores. And there's a reason why he is so expensive, because he's putting up these big scores. It's hard to see that stopping, particularly because he's done it against good ruckmen. He's played Marshall, he's played Darcy and... No, he hasn't played Darcy. He played the two-headed monster of Grundy and Gawn. So he's done against good ruckman. I've got full confidence he's going to be the number one ruckman. But there's a few other plays. Is it a Brody Grundy, who's now got that solo ruck role, a lot more unique, a lot more cheap, so you don't have to worry about making two trades to get English? Does Grundy become an option, even knowing that in probably 4 or 5 weeks he's probably going to be a must-trade, knowing that when Max Gawn's in his team, there's no way he's going to put up a score even close to that 100 mark? 143 he scored last week, which gives him a 76 break-even.
Yeah, Grundy does. Obviously, if you're trading into a Grundy, you are accepting the fact that you're most likely going to have to trade him out. If Max Gawn doesn't have a hiccup with his injury and his rehab, you're going to have to move Grundy on at some point. When they were both playing in the side, he went 69 and 74, which is just well below the output that you're going to need from a ruckman. And if you've gone Grundy over English, and say Gawn comes back and does a miraculous recovery like he did last year when I picked up Jackson, you're going to be really behind the competition. And if English is putting 70 points on his head week to week, that hurts. So I think, again, team dependent, if you're sitting in a position where you've got 33 trades, I think you can justify moving into Grundy. He's probably going to make around 80K over those next 4 weeks, you would hope. And then allow you to upgrade later. But I think if you've got the cash and it's feasible without blowing up your side, I think it's just much preferable to get up to English, because you're going to be using on two trades, one to bring him in, one to bring him out. I think there's probably a handful of coaches that might be in a position where they've already lost a cherry from their starting sides. It might have been a Gawn. I know it jinxed us with Ruck Roulette the other week. You've already might have used a bunch of trades in your midfield, in your rucks, to bring in Grundy to then use another one. So I think if you haven't used many trades, which I'm not really sure many people would be in that boat, you could consider it. But for me, I just think it presents, one, too much risk, and two, it's too short term.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you're confident with English producing. Obviously, Darcy Cameron, that's an easy move. What about owners who have a Rowan Marshall and a bit concerned about his scoring output? He played well again on the weekend, but just his... Normally, your ruckman handball a lot more and their disposal efficiency go up. He doesn't quite get the hit out to advantage of the other top ruckman, being a Witts, English, even a Cameron, obviously Gawn. But then his disposal efficiency is also low because he chooses to kick a lot more than he handballs. Are you concerned about his output, and is he someone who you'd be looking to go to an English if you don't have him?
I'm a little bit concerned with his output, but I'm not overly concerned. He's obviously had one score of 129. He went 80 against Darcy, and then Draper, who I think got on top in the hitouts, especially in the second half. Like, Marshall's a mobile ruckman. That's where he gets his points. He gets them around the ground. And he's probably going to always struggle to put up really big numbers, especially from the hit-out perspective when he's coming up against really good tap ruckman. This week he's obviously got Witts, which is obviously going to be a problem in terms of him winning any hit-outs. But he should be able to take advantage, and he's obviously going to have to do some work around the ground to get on top in that matchup. And then he's got a ruckless Collingwood the week after. So for me, he's not someone I'd be looking to move off. Obviously, he's not doing what we would hope, but I also think he's worth holding, and I wouldn't be using a trade to move him on.
Yeah, I'm also with you there. I'm confident enough with Marshall. I think I've just been a bit extra bitter because I put the captain on him. And to be honest with you, like, I watched him. He took the intercept marks we wanted. It felt like he got the hit out to advantage he wanted. He was another one you could probably put in that bucket where you think he probably could have scored a bit more than It did, but it was just maybe one of those weeks. Quick one, Sean Darcy. I know you did trade last week, and there's big merit to it, knowing that you got a solo ruck in English doing what English is doing. There's going to be a gap between them anyway, even if Darcy's at his best. But just knowing that the unpredictable nature of having a $800,000 player on their list who's also a ruckman, chopping and changing throughout the season, makes it a risky call. But I know a lot of coaches held Darcy for that one simple, easy matchup versus West Coast, and that's why people attract the Grundy too, because he's got that nice matchup this week. I think it kills me every time you sort by points per minute for ruckman. Cherry's still number one. Round two, Flynn Sanity put up a 130-odd on Bailey Williams. So people held Darcy for that big score and it paid off. What if they held him thinking, I'm holding for one more, get the big score, then jump off? Have you seen enough now from Darcy to say, okay, you just hold for a little bit now until obviously Dockers had their first win and played Darcy in the right position, so you might as well see how long that can last for?
Yeah, look, I don't think he's a must-trade, and he wasn't a must-trade last week. He's more of a luxury. If you've got English and Darcy, you certainly hold. The only reason you'd want to move off is to get up to an English, and if you've used six trades, it's probably worth it, but you're probably going to need to do two trades to get in there. I'm very content with trading out of him, even though I only made, 6 points last week on that trade from him to an English. But he scored 132, but he should have scored a whole lot more. I think he was on 90 plus at half time, and then really only had a 40-point second half, which... I guess he's one, a concern. And then two, he's coming up against Adelaide next week, who he doesn't have a great history against, with Riley O. And then he's got Wits the week after, and he needs to dominate hitouts. And I think the problem on the weekend in the second half particularly was that he was still dominating the hitouts, but the opposition team just roved his hitouts, which took a whole lot of points off him, because you actually lose points for having your hitout sharked. So for me, I don't think he's going to be a top two ruckman. He's probably going to be thereabouts, might average the 100-105. And if you can get him up to an English, I still think it's worth doing. But it's not a must do.
Yep, with ya. Let's move into the forward line. No real high performers to speak of. I think out of those big five when we started the year, Dunkley is starting to... He's been underwhelming and still averaging 111, so I think we can't complain there. Rosie bounced back from the lowest score the week before, where he had that concussion test, came back, played a bit more forward, but I think he's going to be every bit of a top couple forward and no stresses there. And then Taranto finally, we've been finding a lot of the footy, and it's funny, it made the media this week after super coaches have known probably for 3 years that he doesn't quite hit the target when it comes to his disposal efficiency, and now the mainstream media finally cotton on. But his 112 was great, and I'm still confident he's going to be a higher... hundreds and even 110 averaging forward from now on. The two out of those big five who underwhelmed last week, Errol Goulden's 85, and it came about with a drop in centre bounces, played some more time forward, so some slight concern there. But me personally, I'm still happy to hold him, hoping that he's going to be a keeper for the full season. And then it's Canelio, who 58 was also pretty underwhelming, but he seemed to still have that perfect role, find a lot of footy, and if you got told at the start of the season that Canelio was going to be a 70% inside mid, looking as fit as he is and injury-free, then I think you'd still continue and just ignore that low score. Obviously, he lost some points giving away that free kick the other day and other things there. Any concerns with either those two, Cogs or Goulden?
No. Goulden, at his price point, you wanted him to be F6 at the end of the year, and I still think he's pretty comfortable to be in that spot and you'd be happy with. And then, yeah, Cogs. Obviously a real rough 50-metre penalty, and that obviously cost him a lot of points. He also went at 55%, had 8 turnovers, and his contested possession percentage was down. He only had 6 contested possessions for the game. So he'll be better than that. He'll average over 100. You don't move off if you got him. I traded Josh Kelly to him after his concussion, which has actually lost me points even though Kelly missed a game. So that's obviously disappointing, but you wear that, and I think, yeah, he'll be fine. It's just one of those games. It'll be his low score for the year, I think.
Okay, let's talk rookies then, because as we prefaced at the start, and if you could learn, you mentioned that trade you made, but there's reasons for it with that concussion with Kelly, but the Kelly Clogs lost your points. I've gone Kelly to Warple, probably a similar boat. coaches who have traded, whether it's a Cameron, a Darcy, to an English. Those first three trades are what they're there for, because no price movements have happened. There for you to do your fix-ups, hope for the best. Now prices are already in action to move. We mentioned that if you're happy with your team, you just got to be patient with it and try to sit on your hands and ideally not trade. But where you would trade are with these rookies. And there's a couple who are on the bubble and a couple who are approaching the bubble. And if you think their job security is good enough, it might be okay to go early. The first one's Will Phillips, who played as a sub round one, still managed a 60-odd and then had that good score last week. Again, they're not going to win every week, but he was a popular, or the most popular, second to Ashcroft rookie in the preseason. So we've now got him on the bubble and have the ability to jump off, whether it's a failed mid-pricer like a Callahan or a Warple or a deadweight rookie like a Chesser, then it's pretty advised. Is he's the best one there for you, or is it the Rolson who's sitting there from GWS who's also on the bubble game?
Yeah, they're a tough decision between the two. I think if you're moving off a mid-pricer down to a rookie, obviously Phillips comes at a little bit more of a premium based on his price, but I also think he's the better option. Like he obviously come on as a sub round one, put up a decent score, had 32% CBAs, even though he was a sub, and then on the weekend had 74. Obviously, LDU and Jai Simkin weren't there on the weekend, so that's not going to be sustainable for him. But they obviously value him in the inside, and you could sort of hope for around the 40 mark at a low point, which I think is going to be good enough to generate points and generate cash. So I think he's probably the better option. It depends on how much money you need. I think him and Rouston, they might make similar cash. If going a Rouston allows you to go up to someone better, if it's maybe getting the English where you couldn't afford it otherwise, I think that's you just go to where the money can be used better. So I think Phillips is ahead of him for me, but then if Rouston enables you to get a better player, you do that.
Yep. And will Phillips be on your field if you are doing that trade?
No, I'll be able to loop him on. Okay. So I'll be able to have a look at his score, and then if he doesn't play well, it'll be probably a McKenzie. But then I've got a Baker as well there, so I'm pretty stacked with rookies.
So you mentioned the loop, and I've also mentioned deadweight rookies, where deadweight rookies can really come into their own with that loop. And it's not just looping with your vice-captain, it's also to get that best rookie score. And I know a lot of coaches are able to hold Hopper and use that as a loop to be able to get a Baker who really did well. So it's a play. And if you've got someone like a Constable who's not playing, or a Chesser, sometimes it might not be worth jumping on a rookie, especially if you're not certain of their job security and their scoring power to even generate enough cash. It's sometimes it's okay to carry one to do that loop. The question is that Ruck R3, where a lot of coaches started with a loop and a donut there because they wanted to run that vice-captain loophole. Now there are a few red dots elsewhere in the field, and we've still got that ability to run the vice-captain loophole. Is Samson Ryan someone you could consider to get that cash generation, or the fact he's playing deep forward and he's had a whole game without scoring or getting a disposal before, he might not even generate much cash anyway, and that's a waste of a trade?
Yeah, I don't think it's worth the trade, to be honest. He's probably not going to make enough. And then even though you probably don't need the loop because there's other ones popping up like they always do, I don't think he's worth the trade to sort of jump off a Madden and then have him in your ruck. I suppose if you've got that DPP potentially as a forward, and then you could move that loop around and then loop a forward player on for Madden and have a look at rookies, potentially you could look at that. But I just don't see it being a move that's going to pay off. He's going to need to pop pretty significantly with one score to generate that cash, because he's not going to do it sustainably week for week in his role.
Well, let's talk then the forwards who do have a few putting up their hand, all three different circumstances. So there's one on the bubble, and it's Joel Amati, who's averaging 100, obviously with a couple of nice matchups in there, particularly that one against the Hawks, but he seems to be looking really good. There's Van Ruin, who, again, got the debut with Gorn out, and it sounds like, or it looks like, he's going to be their second ruck until Gorn returns, which enables ability to not just hopefully kick some goals, but also lay some tackles when he's in the ruck as well, and bump up his floor, and he looked great and scored well on the weekend, but he's not going to change price for another 2 weeks. And then there's Chandler, who I know lots of coaches missed him because they didn't have the trade to get those, whether it's a mid-price or fix-up rookies or whoever it was. First, is it too late to get a Chandler who looked great again? I can't see him ever leaving the side and potentially can still make that 150K from here. Is it silly to go early on a Van Ruin? And if the answer is yes, too late for Chandler, too early for Van Ruin, is Amati a play or you just wait one extra week for a Van Ruin?
I guess on Chandler. So he's gone up 82K. He's got a really nice matchup this week against West Coast. And if he averages a 53, he's going to make another 60K over the next 2 weeks, which you'd think he'd go much better than a 53. So you haven't necessarily missed Chandler. I think if there was a 200? If there was a 200K rookie that had put up two scores and was averaging 84, I think he would be much more consideration. I think the mindset might be, well, I've already missed out on that 80K price rise. I don't want to jump on. I think he's someone you could jump on to. His job security, which was probably the only concern, is good. And then I suppose the other issue is that scoring sustainable, which it probably isn't, I suppose, at that level. You don't think he's going to score that well week in, week out, but he's definitely going to make plenty more cash, and then he's also a pretty good forward option on field as a rookie. So I don't think you've missed him, but I think we said last week he was an absolute must-have, and he's $80,000 cheaper, more expensive. So not someone that I'd probably be targeting personally, but if you really had your heart set on it and you really believed in that extra cash gen and that the scoring was relatively sustainable, you can. But I think he's probably too expensive. He's probably been priced out at this point. Van Ruin, I think you just got to wait another week. We've seen too many times over the years that a rookie's gotten injured in their second game. They've been subbed out, they've been moved out for other players that are coming in, whether it's for balance, even if they haven't performed poorly. So you just got to give him another round. I doubt he's probably going to be on field for anyone, so there's no real reason to go early. And then Amati. Jeezy looks a player. He is so athletic. I think it's tough because he's so expensive at 223. Really, the scoring that you need from him as a key forward is going to be around that mark. You know, he needs to average 75-80 from here at the very least. And is that sustainable relatively young into his career in terms of game played? He's not for me, and I think he's probably too expensive. I'd rather go early on a Van Ruin, to be honest, than picking up a Marty, because you're already banking 100 plus cash.
Yep, I'm 100% with you there, and who knows if what his job security is like. We've seen over the last couple of years, they've got a few decent tools there at the Swans and do change things up, particularly with loss, despite him going well. Chandler, I was with you that he wasn't an absolute must-have last week. Now he's 80K more, but he just seems to get it done. The coach spoke very highly of him post-game, and with an easy matchup this week against West Coast, and if it means you don't have to field a Philippou or another battling forward you might have, then I think it certainly isn't too late on him. So he'll still generate enough cash. But, yeah, knowing that Van Ruin will hope to generate a fair bit as well from the next week, knowing Gorn's out. So all that said and done, Tommy, we've gone through these big players. What are you currently looking at for your trades?
Yeah, for me, it'll be a Callaghan to Phillips. And I think I'll just stay there. There's nowhere that I can use that 100K on my field. So I think I'll just bank that. Maybe I get an injury in the next couple of weeks to Hopper or someone along those lines or set a field, and then I can use that cash to upgrade them. I just value having it in the bank to make the moves when they come, rather than making a trade, which I'd probably be forcing.
Yeah. Well, I think this time last year I mentioned I used five by after round three, and I used two this round, so I was seven deep. So don't be too scared if you do have to go seven deep by now. Mind you, I did run out of trades with a few rounds to go. And what I normally do is follow that same what I've done in the past, knowing it works and not being afraid to be aggressive. But I've gone from, yeah, the reactionary Doc today, which got me Warple up to LDU, to now thinking, well, let's just sit on my hands. Let's not use a trade and at least have that up my advantage. And obviously, Doherty, I'm turning around on knowing he's got that easy matchup versus North Melbourne. It's more potentially a Ridley down, which can get me Warple up. But as this stands, I won't be trading, but I'll send through my final thoughts on the trade insights will come through Thursday morning and then the Friday quick fire Q&A. But thanks again. Hope you enjoyed that. Thanks again for your support and we'll touch base come Thursday. Cheers, Tommy.
Cheers, mate. Good luck, everyone. Thank you.